Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing teenage fire, AI credit scores, and a new reason to hate gift cards.
That's right, Joel. This is our Friday Flight episode where we're going to tackle some different headlines, some different stories that we came across this week, specifically how they're going to affect your money. But first,
your personal finances,
your cash and your wallet.
That's right.
But your nose is looking a little red, man.
Is it?
You rode over here and you're kind of cold outside.
Yeah, it's a little nippy. On that note, there's this one thing I think when it comes to how people can stay warm when they're biking this winter, because fortunately in Atlanta, it doesn't get ridiculously cold. Like, I can't imagine living in the Twin Cities and biking every single day. And I'm sure I'd get used to it, but
it's painful.
Yeah.
When it's that cold.
As a Southerner, it doesn't sound appealing.
But it gets cold enough down here. I mean, when you're riding, you've got the regular temperature, but then the faster you go, the worse that it gets. You know, yeah. Like that wind chill gets kicking, and all of a sudden your nose is numb.
Exactly. But I think if you're looking for like literally one item worth purchasing that makes a big difference in how warm you feel when you're biking, obviously a nice jacket is helpful. Like, don't wear short socks, like have long socks. But if there's like one item that maybe most people don't think about, it's a balaclava. You know what those are?
It sounds Russian.
So it's basically the things they pull all the way over your head, and they warm your neck. They
like
warm
the
top of your head.
The uncle from Chevy Chase and Lampoon's Christmas.
I don't know if I've ever seen that somehow. I need to watch that. Yeah,
like. That's not
that's
leather.
That's a classic. I feel like I'm missing out.
I think that's also maybe called a balaclava, but maybe it's not what you're talking about.
Right.
I know what you're talking. You're talking about more like the athletic version that goes over your entire head, right?
Exactly. So we'll post a link to one in the show notes, but I was looking on Amazon just to see what they go for, and you can get one for $7. And I was like, that is a well-spent $7 if it keeps you on your bike more during this winter, and it'll cover your mouth if you want. I hate it covering my mouth. I feel like I can't breathe as well.
Yeah.
But you can cover your mouth and nose. It goes just kind of down below your hairline, and it's one of those things where it's like, for $7, if it's going to keep you on your bike, make it happen.
Yeah, I was going to say gloves, because for me, that's the number one thing that keeps me biking throughout the winter, because I don't care if my face gets a little bit cold. Zip my jacket up a little bit higher, but having your hands, that's your connection to the bike.
That's
and
true.
You got to make sure that you have a good solid grip, that you
I'm
can shift the gears, that you can hit the brakes.
Definitely wearing gloves too, of course.
Yeah. That goes a long way. But for me, I don't think I can put anything else over my head to get under my helmet, because as I've grown my hair out over the past year, my helmet, it barely fits now, and I kind of have to wiggle it on there. But we'll see how long this long hair lasts.
All right,
anyway.
Let me know if you need me to give you a trim, too. I can make that happen.
I think you do a good job.
All right. Well,
I would trust you.
Let's move on. Let's get to the Friday flight and the stories we found interesting this week. First up, Matt, is that teenage fire story.
Let's hear it.
There was an article in the New York Post, and it was...
The fire crowd just keeps getting younger and younger.
Apparently, like, the fire is spreading to the youth. And it was a fun read. There's this like 10-year-old entrepreneur named Pixie Curtis, which I thought was a great name too. And apparently she can retire at age 15 if she wants to. That's at least according to her mom. So yeah, the fire movement continues to get realer. And you know what? It's funny. So many people who pursue fire end up vlogging or podcasting about it too. So I can't wait for Pixie's podcast to
I'm looking forward Google to her
podcasts.
Memoir when she hits 20.
The life I've lived. Yes, it's going to be fun.
You're like, wait, what? You're 20 years old.
But what has she done, I guess, to get to this point? Well, she started a successful toy and accessory business. She sold over $200,000 worth of product the first month she was even in business.
Yeah, mind-blowing.
Which is cool. And her mom talked about how proud she is of her daughter's entrepreneurial spirit. Of course, that's awesome and worth celebrating. What a wonderful thing, I would say, to help your kids see the power of starting a business early on. I think that's a perfect age, like age 10, 11, 12, to help your kids start a business, to see that there are so many options out there for you in this world to serve other people and then to make money doing it. My guess is, Matt, the Pixie is not actually going to retire at age 15, because what do you do when all your friends are in high school? And that sounds kind of boring. But I would say half the fun of business ownership is building something cool and the creativity that comes alongside of it.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem we have consistently said with the fire movement, is that what's the fun in actually retiring and there's definitely not much fun, I would say, about retiring at the age of 15.
Yeah, I mean, starting a business, entrepreneurship, we think, I mean, obviously, a lot of folks aren't going to be able to immediately hit fire in 5 years after starting a business.
Right.
But especially for kids, I think being able to learn some of these lessons this early on is huge. Like, I see two major lessons that kids can learn by doing something like this. First of all, like hard work and the ability to earn money. That is such a basic, and but not basic like in a simple way, but like a foundational, everything else needs to kind of be built upon this idea that if you don't work, if you do not find some way to contribute to society, you don't get. And that is a lesson that obviously you want your kids to learn. You want them to be productive, not only teenagers, but adults. That's my first lesson. The second lesson, though, is the autonomy, the ability for a kid that young to learn that you don't have to necessarily go down this path that's set before you of working for 20, 30, 40 years, whatever, in a job that you don't necessarily love. The ability to have agency and make changes to your life, I think, are massive. And I think the earlier that you're able to start thinking this way, the better.
Yeah, I think that is the last thing you said. In my mind, the best thing that the FIRE movement has produced is it's told a lot of people, actually, like what everyone has told you need to do with your life, that's not true.
Yep.
And so the positive spin, it's some people, it is a hatred of work and it's like, I got to get out of there as quickly as possible. And for other people, it is truly that ability to say like, no, I just don't have to take the same route that everyone else is taking, and I want more choice in my life.
Absolutely. Yeah. But let's say that you didn't retire in high school though.
Which neither of us did, sadly.
Maybe you're looking for a new job. There is this one trend in the job market that you should avoid at all costs, and you've definitely heard this term before, ghosting. There have been a few articles about this phenomenon recently, but people are canceling interviews last minute, or worse, they're not even showing up. Some folks are not even just showing up to like their first day of work. They're not even saying that, oh, by the way, I quit before I even started.
Okay, so I've got just one quick story. One of my friends, back in the day, I think I've talked about working in the Eckerd Photo Lab, which was one of the best jobs I've ever had, and he quit with a piece of paper left on like the photo machine. And it's just a terrible way to leave, right? I mean,
but also when you're a teenager, that's not
it's not going to haunt you in the same way.
Yeah, it's not the kind of lesson that I want to teach my kids, but it's certainly something that folks are basically doing today. And that's a problem because, I mean, the world, it's smaller than you think it is. If you found another gig or you just aren't interested in this job anymore, like that's totally fine. That's okay. But there's a way to back out of an interview or even a job offer with respect. And then there's ghosting. And so if you do that, you are just you're hurting your reputation in the industry. You might be burning some bridges unnecessarily. That's a big reason why we don't call it FU money. We call it peace out money, because it's not about sticking it to whoever you were working for. It's not about sticking it to the man, but it's about being excited about moving towards something else that you have the ability to politely say peace out.
Yep.
But this is true for companies as well, because they do a poor job with this. We saw this recently. The online mortgage company, Better, they fired those, 900 folks in a one-way Zoom call? Which is, like, it's almost comical, because you could just imagine people being like, wait, what? And just like screaming at their computers, furious with this company.
But they're all on mute and they can't be heard.
Yes, exactly.
So when I read that story, I was just... One, I thought Better was a cool company, and it just completely destroyed
yes.
the way
oh,
I
dude.
Viewed them.
Yeah, 100%. It completely has changed how I view that company. But if you want to turn down a job, even just a brief email to cancel the interview or to opt out of an application process, and who knows, you know, that might go a long ways in helping you to get a job in that company in the future or another company. If folks there happen to move on, you don't want to ghost people. You don't want to burn those bridges.
It's not worth it. Like, it doesn't take a whole lot to say, hey, thanks for the job offer, but I found something else. Or, hey, thanks for this interview opportunity, but it turns out I'm going in a different direction. Like, that's a pretty simple thing to do, and it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But Matt, speaking of jobs, there was an article about public displays of resignation in the New York Times, kind of on this line where...
Yeah, not just sticking it to your boss, but then telling everybody about how you stuck it to the boss.
Yeah, and I guess if you were a Better employee, I might be posting about that too and be like...
And by Better, you mean Better.com.
Exactly.
Employee. Yeah,
I might be like, this is ridiculous, not cool, that I just got fired over Zoom alongside hundreds of my other colleagues. But more people are denigrating their former employer or their boss, specifically on social media these days. And like you just said, it's okay to quit your job or to change your mind before you decide to take a job. But there's no need to be a jerk when you're quitting, flinging mud all over, you know, the interwebs and, you know, tweeting about how you hate your employer, anything like that. Like, similarly to ghosting, this is going to hurt you in the long run, especially as more and more employers take stock of your social media history. They don't want to hire someone who has been talking trash about their former employer because, you know what? They know they're going to be next in line
exactly
to get thrown under the bus.
Yeah, yeah. They don't want their business to be a part of the next quick talk that person happens to put out.
Exactly, exactly. And this totally reminded me, Matt, actually, of one of my first job interviews for a job that I was at for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And they asked me about my former employer, and they knew the guy I worked for. They told me this after the fact. Was notoriously difficult to work with.
Oh, really?
So they asked about my relationship with him, and I didn't lie, but I was also, I mostly said the good things.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to talk trash about this guy. And I did learn a lot in that first job that I had, but it was one of those things where they told me after the fact, that's a huge part of the reason we decided to hire you, because
Nice. We
know that he was hard to work with and you made it sound like it wasn't the worst thing ever. And we appreciated that.
You're a peacemaker, Joel. Yeah. I mean, seriously, if you've got two qualified candidates, one is okay looking, you know, like you are. No. If let's say they're both beautiful, you and this other applicant. But yeah, if the other applicant was just talking trash the whole time, the ability to be diplomatic when it comes to your work relationships like that, I think certainly will go a long way. That doesn't surprise me that they hired you anyway. Even if you had been the trash talker, I would have hired you. dude, so we're talking about jobs here. The most recent jobs report actually had this interesting dichotomy, because hiring slowed for many employers, but evidently many individuals came back to the job market as overall employment was actually up. And so how can that be? Well, it turns out many folks are quitting to start their own businesses, to start their own thing. Entrepreneurship is up in a big way. You know, we just talked about this with Pixie. Business applications have skyrocketed over the past 15 months or so. Etsy, they report that the number of sellers has tripled over the past 2 years. Just overall, the number of self-employed workers is higher than it has been in 11 years. And all of these things point to a job market that is changing in a significant way. And while, you know, starting your own business, it is not for everyone. We totally get that. But having more small businesses, we think, is a good thing for our country. I should have mentioned this a second ago. We're talking about Pixie. This makes me think of our daughter, Evie, because Kate and the girls, they're out in a store. And it's kind of like one of these stores where they've got some stuff by like a brand that sells nationally, but they also have like a lot of local stuff. And they saw these woven like hot pad trivets. And Kate pointed that out and was like, Evie, look at that. And it was literally what Evie has been making. She recently was gifted like this little hot pad trivet maker, like where you make these little, I don't know, like maybe 8x8 squares.
Uh-huh.
And you make these weavings, use different colors. Boom, it's a hot pad. They had it listed for $30. And Kate was just like, hey, if you make me one of these in some different colors, maybe we'll gift them to some friends and family, and I'll pay you $10 for every one of them that you make. And so they worked out a deal. I can't exactly remember how it is that Evie's going to be paying for the supplies. I can't remember if they front loaded it and then she's going to kind of pay off the supplies, or if she's just going to get less of a cut per item that she makes. But she's totally into it, man. She's making, I think she's already made like two or three of them. Maybe y'all will get one. I'm surprised.
I hope so.
I'm surprised. But they're really cool. And it's just another great way. Again, and she's only eight, but the ability to instill within the mind of a kid that this is something that you can do. You have control over your future. That is huge.
Yeah, so she's a part of this entrepreneurial trend, which is great. And,
well, I think she's doing it under the radar. She doesn't have a license yet.
I guess the question is, at what time is she going to fire? Is she going to be like 19, 20? Like, when's that going to come down the pike?
12, 13.
Okay, all right. Start her young.
She's going for it.
All right. Well, I love seeing that, Matt. I love seeing this trend. And I think as long as you quit amicably, starting your own thing is a great thing. And Yep. Seeing that upward trend is great. Let's talk about gift cards for a second, Matt, because gift card scams are on the rise too, not just entrepreneurship. And there was this really, really interesting article on CNET this week about a band of, I'm going to call them like Robin Hood-esque people who are attempting to shut down rings of scammers.
So like Avengers of the Night, like almost like kind of like these Batman style.
Yes, exactly. Like the signal goes up and they go attack the people who are scamming folks, right?
Yeah.
Scamming people specifically out of money that's on gift cards that they have. And I think this is cool because mostly these scams go unreported. And when they do get reported, there's almost nothing that law enforcement does to fight back.
Right.
And so, yeah, we'll link to this article in our show notes because it's worth reading. But the reason we bring this up is not just to tell you that something cool is going on out there, that there are people, roving bands of people, attacking the gift card scammers and trying to bring down their businesses.
The scam baiters, like, you know, like you bait a fish.
Exactly. Yeah. I like it. And then they club them over the head. and so if someone ever reaches out to you and wants you to pay with a gift card, it's a scam. And there are so many ripoffs that go down like this. Like, and this has become so common. It's terrible. So many people lose money this way. And of course, the reason they do this is because that payment then is not traceable. Mm-hmm. It is truly devious. And it's nice to know that there are people out there who are trying to bring down that nefarious system.
That's right. Yeah. So from where we're sitting, gift cards are not a good gift. We've talked about this before on the show. Trading real money for a gift card only makes sense if you're getting a great discount in order to do it, right? If you're getting $50 worth of goods for only $40, that kind of thing. But with the holidays just around the corner, if you haven't purchased a gift for someone, like, you might be tempted to grab a gift card last minute. But we would advise you to avoid gift cards altogether, not necessarily because of the scam rings out there. All of you How to Money listeners out there are fairly sophisticated. We specifically want you to look out for those around you. We don't think that you're going to have your money necessarily stolen. But it's because that stats show that $3 billion in gift card funds are never redeemed. And so there's a good chance of that money going to complete waste. So instead, just give an actual gift, give some cash with a thoughtful note instead. There are a lot of different options rather than the sort of the token gift card. And in fact, I am pretty excited about my ability to use a gift card Saturday morning at a local coffee shop that's been just knocking around our junk drawer for the past like two or three years. I am so stoked to redeem that money and kind of stick it to the man in my own way.
Yeah, no, I have the same. I think we all have those gift cards that are lying around. And so, of course, you and I were on this mission to make cash not a dirty gift, to make it actually a great gift. And so, yeah, they're better than gift cards. Let's be honest. All right, Matt, we got more stories to get to, including one about travel insurance and what you need to know before you book a trip. We'll get to that and more right after this break.
All right, Joel, this is our Friday Flights. We're going to talk about that travel story here in a little bit. Do you and Emily, do y'all have any travel planned anytime soon?
A trip down to Orlando to visit
mom. You're going to be driving. No flying in the
airplane.
Flights. Yeah. I hope to actually get a... This 2022, man, this is the 15th anniversary for Kate and I. So I really should start thinking now about what that's going to look like this fall.
I'm thinking one of those Blue Origin space flights. What do you think?
I just saw that one guy actually went to the space station. Super cool.
Yeah.
The other guys before, they're only in space for like a minute. This guy is spending
like 2 weeks, right?
So awesome.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of space... If you're going to do it, like, go all out. go to the ISS.
I don't think the accommodations are super nice up there, though.
Okay, let's get to our ludicrous headline of the week. This one is from the Washington Post and our friend of the show, Michelle Singletary. But the headline reads, "New rules allow debt collectors to track you down on social media." Joel, starting last week, debt collectors can now hound you on social media. And we actually do mean hound, because unlike when debt collectors contact you via the phone, you know, with a phone call, there's no limit to the number of messages that they can send you by text message or via social media. They are limited to 7 phone calls within a 7-day period of time. But if you owe some debt, you might find your DMs blowing up. Sounds like a whole lot of fun, right? But luckily, we're not completely hung out to dry. We're not completely on our own, because collectors actually have to follow 3 specific rules. And these are rules issued by the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. First of all, the messages have to be private. And so no posting on your timeline. They can't post in your comments anywhere else that isn't completely private to your eyes only. Secondly, they have to identify themselves as a debt collector. So there's, you know, like, no shady business where they, like, they're going to pretend to be a friend of yours from high school, that kind of thing.
Hey, Judy, miss you. By the way, pay up.
And then lastly, they have to include a simple way for you to opt out being contacted on that platform. And it's got to be really simple, really easy to do. And they have to do that with every single message that they send. And so, you know, on one hand, I understand sort of like the ludicrous elements of this, because it's like, holy crap, like, we're not safe anywhere. But on the other hand, I do feel that this is fairly reasonable, because previously, like, these rules were set out like in the 70s. Text messages, social media, these things did not exist. So I want to be reasonable. I think that it's okay for us to be reached out But as long as the debt collectors are following the rules, and as we all know, there's always some rotten apples that kind of ruin things for everybody.
That's right, yeah. And so it's good to know the rules so in advance so that if something happens, if you get contacted via social media and they do not abide by those three rules, you can contact the CFPB and report that debt collector.
Let them know.
Exactly. So Matt, speaking of that, let's talk about credit scores. You and I, we've had our gripes with the credit scoring system over the years.
The system. Speaking of understanding the rules and how things work.
Yeah, it's kind of complex. And a lot of people don't understand how it works. And so because of that, because of how convoluted things are, a lot of people have poorer credit scores than they should have. You know, once you know how the system works and what makes for a good score, it's easy to cater your spending habits, the way you use credit, in order to increase your score. But if you don't understand the way it works behind the scenes, then you're going to have a harder time. Mm-hmm. So there's so many folks in our country who have no score or who have rough scores, and that just impacts them in a whole slew of ways. But the New York Times reported this week that a bunch of forward-looking companies are trying to figure out how to bypass the credit bureaus and find other ways to verify your credit worthiness. They're calling these new models AI credit scores or artificial intelligence credit scores. And so, yeah, considering the problems with the credit scoring system these days, I think some of these AI credit scores are going to be good things. I think we've actually already seen and are continuing to see some of these being implemented, and most of the effects are positive.
That's right. Most of the effects. And so far, they've been positive. Because I feel like it always depends on how much data you're willing to fork over, because that's kind of the big, like the looming threat, right? When it comes to some of the different software and some of the different apps, it's like, hey, this is actually a free service to you. And in your mind, you should be thinking, yeah, it's quote unquote free as long as I give you all of my data, all of my information.
What's the actual price I'm paying?
Exactly. Yeah. And so these companies are mining just other widely available data in order to make a better decision about whether or not they should extend credit to you. You know, we've talked about the Pedal card, which uses your banking history to give you what they call a cash score based on your income, plus your spending and saving patterns, instead of using a score from one of the credit bureaus. And that Times article profiles a company called Upstart that is working with banks to offer loans to folks without great credit. And, you know, like while we think that you should be careful before bringing in any new debt into your life, of course, it is great to see just a new model outside of the main three bureaus. We are glad to see that these different companies are looking at just the vast quantity of other data that is worth looking at besides what it is that Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion currently take into account. And of course, this can make a big difference, not only in whether or not you get approved for a loan or not, but also, of course, the interest rate that you'll pay.
Exactly. Yeah, you might find that going with a traditional old school bank who uses your old school traditional credit score from one of the credit bureaus offers you one rate, and then you go somewhere else.
I thought you meant like old school bank, like It's a Wonderful Life, just like on a handshake kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like no credit scores here, just like, do I know your papa?
No, I'm saying that like if you go the traditional route,
right,
and they're
yeah.
using your credit score, you might get one rate offer, and then you go to a company who's using one of these new AI credit scores, and you might get a much more precise, a better rate because of the fact that they're taking more data into account when
totally.
They're making that decision.
I was just baiting you with It's a Wonderful Life. Isn't that
don't make me cry,
it's
Matt.
It's one of your favorite Christmas movies,
I cry every time I watch it.
So I literally haven't watched it in like 10 years or something like that. I cannot remember the last time that I actually sat down and watched it.
Oh, it's good. It's a good one.
I'll remedy that this season.
It's a tearjerker. But Matt, let's move on to our next story. This one is about travel and travel insurance.
Let's hear it.
We haven't really talked much, you and I, about the Omicron variant.
Good job. I feel there was a lot of confusion early on as to how you, like, is it, oh, I don't even know how people were saying, but it's Omicron. That's how I mean.
Every time I
see it. It's the most natural way to say it, Omicron.
Yeah.
Easy.
For some reason, it reminds me of the Transformers. Was there a Transformer named Omicron?
Oh.
Or something similar to that?
I didn't really watch Transformers when I was a kid.
Me neither.
I watched He-Man. I watched Inspector Gadget. You know, all the other classics.
Darkwing Duck.
Hey, what if the old variant was Delta? What if this variant was called, like, Southwest?
You just name them all after all the airlines. They're not hurting enough, Matt.
I know, exactly. It yeah. seems like an unfair thing were that to be the case.
Yes. Yeah, let's not do that. But the question is, do you need to purchase trip insurance if you're headed on a domestic or international trip? And we'd say the answer is that depends. Mm-hmm. Because before you buy a policy, it's important to know what it covers. For instance, almost no trip insurance policy is going to cover your cancellation because of COVID fears. Like Matt, my brother-in-law, recently went to Michigan, mm-hmm. and he wasn't sure if he was going to take the trip because cases were yep. up in Michigan.
Yeah.
And even if he had trip insurance, it would not have helped him out in that case. That is not a valid reason to cancel your trip.
It's not included in that fine print.
Exactly. And on the other hand, if you get sick from COVID or really sick with something else and you have a doctor's note that says that, then your trip insurance plan is going to cover it in almost all cases. And so we would say, yeah, if you need to purchase trip insurance, make sure that you know what you're getting. Like you said, Matt, read the fine print, because you can purchase trip insurance that is cancel for any reason trip insurance, which allows you to cancel for any reason. And
that's CFAR
yes,
insurance.
But that costs more, and it also doesn't refund you the full price of your trip. And so even in that case, it's like, great, I'll be golden. I can cancel for whatever reason I want. And it's like, yes, you can, but that that insurance still costs you money, and you don't get actually a full reimbursement for what you spent. You got to know what you're getting into, and also shop the open market. There are sites like Squaremouth and insuremytrip.com where you should go to take a look. Don't just get the insurance policy that is on the airlines page when you're buying your tickets. Go out there in the open market and make sure you get a better deal, and hopefully a policy that covers you for what you actually need.
Squaremouth. Weird name, good company. real quick, a new Gallup survey that was just released reveals that almost half of Americans are feeling financial pain because of what's happening with inflation. Maybe that might be a situation you find yourself in. And you know, we are seeing gas prices starting to recede a little bit. Higher prices at the pump and at the grocery store have, in particular, been incredibly hard for lower income households to absorb. And I mention that because we're actually going to do a deep dive on inflation, how it's making us a little crazy, how we should be reacting to inflation. We'll actually cover that on next Wednesday's episode, so you can look forward to that.
Yeah, I feel like so many headlines touching on inflation, and it's probably like, it's like water cooler talk now for so many people. It's like, oh man, have you seen the prices here and here? And mm-hmm. is it transitory? Is it not transitory? Is like, feels like the word of the year to me. We've used it so much more than ever before. But yeah, we'll kind of get into some of our thoughts and how you should think about inflation next week. Looking forward to that one. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks who want the show notes and links to some of the items that we mentioned on this episode, you can find those at our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right, man. So until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.